Bava Basra, Perek Yud, Mishnah Zion, 10-7. This Mishnah has no fewer than five different topics, and it's actually broken up to four different Mishnayos in the Bavli's version of the Mishnayos, in the Gemara there. So the first topic really has nothing to do with kind of anything. If anything, it's more connected to the previous parakum we're talking about inheritance. The reason it's coming up here, perhaps, is because in the previous Mishnah we had said that the borrower who's lacking funds and therefore is in this pickle with only a partial repayment and is exposed with the possibly losing his receipt. So this Mishnah will say another scenario where a person, if he is lacking means, so since he's doesn't have the money to do what he wants to do, then he has limited options and is exposed and to further loss. So here the Mishnah says inside Shnei Achim, you have two brothers, Echad Ani ve'Echad Ashir. The one of them is poor and one of them is rich. And their father died and bequeathed to them either a merchatz, that's like a hot, what do you call it, bathhouse, or a beis habad is a press for oils, olives, to make olive oil. So the situation here is that the rich son wants to keep this asset for his private use, in sharing with his brother, that's fine, but the point is not more than that. Whereas the poor brother says, listen, I want to make this like a rental property, I want to monetize it, I'll rent out the press, or I'll rent out I make a business out of the bathhouse, because I need the money. So who do we listen to? So it has to be a case where this particular bathhouse or olive press is too small to be divided into two halves. Of course, if you divide into two halves, then each one would take their own half and do what they want with it, but this is too small for that. Now, normally the rule is, once you have something which is a resource that hasn't got a din chaluka, it's too small to divide in half, and both halves remain, economically viable. So then the rule is that the one who wants to do the splitting can say, good or agud. Listen, you have two options. Either you buy it from me, my half, or I'll buy your half from you. And that way, one of us remains the owner, only one of us, and that's fair. That's how it normally works. The problem is, you can't make the demand of good or agud if you haven't got the money to buy out your partner, or in this case your brother, and the poor brother doesn't have that money, and therefore he can't make that demand. So therefore, says the Mishnah, the rule will be that however the resource was used before their father died, that's how it should continue. So if it was a private bathhouse or a private oil press, then it remains private amongst the boys. And if it was one that was rented out for commercial purposes, so then it can continue to be rented out for commercial purposes. So says the Mishnah, asa'an l'sachar, if in the past they had been used to produce rental income, so then they should continue to be rented out, hasachar le'emtza, and the proceeds they get from the rent should go to the middle, meaning divided between the two brothers, as is fair according to the laws of Yerusha. Let's call it 50-50, assuming there's no bechor here. However, asan la'atzman, if they've been used for private purposes, and the girsa here of atzman, their purposes, themselves, is a little strange, but the girsa in the Bavli, for example, and many Rishonim, is asan la'atzmo, that he originally had used these things, meaning the bathhouse or the oil press, la'atzmo, for his private use. So then, hareha asher omer la'ani, so then they will not rent it out, and instead the richer brother can say to the poor one, kachlach avadim b'yirchatzu b'merchatz. Listen, get your own slaves to fire up the furnaces and do the bathhouse, and you can use it for probably the bathhouse. Kachlach zesim, get yourself some olives. Uvo va'asem b'beis abad. You can then come and bring them and press them in the press. Meaning, listen, this is our private resource. You want to use it, go right ahead. You can't afford it, that's not my problem. But the point is, it's staying private. He's within his rights to do so, because that's how it always was used in the past. That'll be the din. Just note the word, this is for the grammatical people, va'asem b'beis abad is not from the word like oset, like to do or make, but rather like kind of related to the word, let's say in modern Hebrew, of isui, of massage. Va'asem b'beis abad, it's like to press them in the beis abad, in the olive press. Okay, period. Like new paragraph, new Mishnah. We're going back to our topic of contract law here. And this part of the Mishnah has a very peculiar case. It says, what happens if you have a city where two residents of the city have the exact same name? And since the time of the Mishnah, what was normal is simply to just put refer to the person who's one party to a contract by his name and his father's name, so-and-so ben so-and-so, Yosef ben Shimon. So then what do you do if there are two Yosef ben Shimons? So the short of the answer, and the short answer of the Mishnah is, yeah, that can bring up all sorts of problems. And a contract which is ambiguous, where there's two possible people that have the same name, Yosef ben Shimon, from the same town, it's not really enforceable, we'll say the Mishnah. So you're sort of stuck. And therefore, what you should do is you should add a more details to the name so you can know which Yosef ben Shimon we're talking about and therefore avoid these problems. Says the Mishnah inside, Shnayim Shahayu Bir Achas. There are two guys living in the same city. Shem Echad Yosef ben Shimon. Mr. A's name is Yosef ben Shimon. Veshem Acher Yosef ben Shimon. Mr. B's name is also Yosef ben Shimon. So now, what happens next? So if we're talking about a scenario where Mr. A lent money to Mr. B or vice versa, so the sad truth is that the lender will not be able to collect from the borrower because the contract, he says Yosef ben Shimon will pay back Yosef ben Shimon, but whoever is being claimed against can say, what are you talking about? I'm the lender, not the borrower. He can deflect, and since the contract doesn't say anything to the contrary, that's going to stand in the Bezdin. What could you do? That's what the Mishnah says. Ein nechon lahotzi shtar chov ze al ze. Mr. A, Yosef ben Shimon, can't bring out an IOU against Mr. B, Yosef ben Shimon, and enforce it in court because there's no proof that it was him. Again, we're assuming, of course, that the borrower is being a crook here, perhaps, but maybe it's the supposed lender is actually being the crook, who knows. But the point is that they're fighting, and of course they could pay if they wanted, but they don't want to. And similarly, we haven't got witnesses that can confirm who it is and the like. Fine. Okay. Second of all, Nimtza le'echad ben shterosav. If some guy, a third party, he looks in his drawer and he finds a shtar, and the shtar says, the contract that he finds in his drawer says, shtaro shel Yosef ben Shimon parua, the loan that I had out to Yosef ben Shimon, that's been repaid. The problem is that our guy, a third party here, actually made two loans to each of the two Yosef ben Shimons. And now he found a note to himself that confirms that one of them repaid. He doesn't know which one it was, so therefore, shtaros shnehen parun, he has to treat both of the loans as if they've been repaid, because he can't, I don't want to say just in good conscience, he can't, according to the letter of the law, enforce the one contract because it's wrong, right? Because maybe the person he tries to collect from already paid once before. Again, we're talking about a case where he doesn't know. He doesn't remember who was the actual person repaid, so he has to err to the side of caution. He can't collect unlawfully, and therefore collects from neither. So now, says the Mishnah further, so what should these guys do? Like, how do you deal with the situation where the two guys have the same name in the same town? So, yishaleshu, which means something like you should triple them up, which means don't just use two names, Yosef ben Shimon, but do Yosef ben Shimon and then the father's name, Yosef ben Shimon, meaning the paternal grandfather of Yosef, Yosef ben Shimon ben Yaakov. Okay? Vimhayu mishulashim. What happens if these guys are, so to speak, I'll translate it as triplets, for lack of a better term, meaning both of these two guys, A and B, both had the exact same name. Yosef was his name, both of them. Their father's name was Shimon, and their grandfather, their paternal grandfather's name was Yaakov. So then what do? So then, Yichtavu Simon, then you describe them. You say, it's the Yosef ben Shimon with the big nose, the short one, and that kind of thing. V'imhayu Musumanim, what happens if they both are short, and they both have big noses, or whatever it is. So therefore, what should you do? Yichtavu Kohen, then you have to do something else, like what tribe they're from, Kohen. Or if you don't have that, then you go to, like, say, a fourth generation back. That's even worse, of course, because not everyone knows who their great-great-grandparents even were. But in any case, the point is you got to do it your best if you can. If you don't, then you're stuck with an unenforceable contract. Of course, nowadays, this just simply wouldn't happen because people use unique identifiers like a two-dot-hood social security number and the like to confirm which of the two we're talking about. Okay. Now, the next part of the Mishnah, which is like a new Mishnah in the Bavli, says you have a person, let's say he's like on his deathbed, and he tells his son, Ha'omer Levano, Shtar Ben Shtarosai Parua. He says, listen, I have a drawer which has a bunch of IOUs, but listen, kid, one of those 10 IOUs has already been repaid. And that's all he says, because Ve'en Yodea Ezehu, I just don't know which of the 10 it was, says the father to the son. So now the son, even though he has 9 live IOUs, he can't enforce any of them because he doesn't know which one was repaid, and he doesn't want to essentially steal from somebody, and therefore anybody who doesn't volunteer to repay, he cannot collect a second time, or collect on a contract because it might be a second time. And therefore, it says the Mishnah, he has to treat all of them as shtaras kulan peruin, as if all the contracts have been repaid. Now, if nimtza le'echad sham shnayim, if amongst the documents he sees there's a particular borrower who borrowed twice, you know, he borrowed $50 one week and borrowed $100 the second week, there are two IOUs. In that case, of course, since the father said one has been repaid, that means only one's been repaid, not the other one. So what should he do? Says the Mishnah, Hagadol Parua, the son should assume that the larger debt has been repaid. I'll call that the best case scenario for the borrower. The 100, we'll call it. Vakatan Eno Parua, and assume that the lesser one, we'll call it the 50, was not repaid. So at least he can collect on the 50. He can't collect the 100 because maybe it was repaid, but the 50 he could. And again, obviously, if the borrower says, no, I never repaid it, then the borrower could pay what he owes. Okay, good. Now, new topic altogether, new Mishnah and the Bavli again. Here we're talking about an Arev. An Arev is a guarantor on a loan. Okay, so the basic guarantor on a loan basically says that Reuven and Shimon wants to borrow money from Reuven. Reuven's afraid that Shimon won't pay him back. So there's a third person, you know, Warren Buffett, the rich neighbor, and they say, listen, Warren, if you agree to make good on the loan, if Shimon defaults, then I'll lend him. And Warren says, yeah, you know, if Shimon doesn't pay you back, I will. Okay, so that's a classic Arev. It'd be written to the contract as such. So in that scenario, the Mishnah says, Hamalves chavero alidei Arev. If Reuven lends money to Shimon, and there's an Arev, good old Warren, who is the, you know, who's the guarantor. Lo yipara min ha'arev. You're not allowed, the lender's not allowed to go demanding money back from the Arev. That's all the Mishnah says. But what it means is, before he sort of exhausts his legal rights against Shimon the borrower. So we can't just like say, listen, Warren, Shimon's not paying me and I'm just too lazy to deal with it. You have to pay me now. No, Warren can say, listen, I don't want to pay you. Take Shimon to Bez, and if he won't pay you, let the courts try to get him to pay. And if Shimon, you know, is found guilty in the courts and he still refuses after that, so then okay, then of course I'm the Arev, I'll have to pay. But you have to exhaust your possibilities by taking him to Bezin, getting a judgment against him first. Okay. Now, Ve'im Amar, and if on the lender says at the time he's making the loan, I'm gonna lend to Shimon the borrower, Amanas She'epara Memi She'erza, that on condition that I can get paid back from whoever I choose, whether it be the borrower or the Arev. So then, says the Mishnah, Yipara min ha'arev. So then indeed, the lender can get money back from the Arev. They can get demand repayment back from the guarantor, even before or without needing to take the borrower to Beis Din. So what happens is, of course, first, the lender has to ask the borrower to make good on the loan. If the borrower basically says no, or just, you know, I can't or I won't, so then we don't require, if the loan was made in this way, that he said, I'm she'epara memi she'erza, so then he doesn't need to take him to Beis Din anymore. He, the lender, can just skip the Beis Din step of the borrower and say, I'm not dealing with this guy, he's a crook. Go straight to the Arev Warren and say, Warren, your buddy, the borrower, is just not paying me back, you have to pay me now. And that'll be, yes, that'll be, no, he'd have to pay. Now, the Mishnah has missing words, by which I mean, I'll show you later on how you can see there are some missing words, expressly in our Mishnah, but the point is our Gemara says, there's a chasuri mechsera, there are words that are missing, bahachi itani, you should like impute, insert these words into the Mishnah to make it make sense. And this is a whole other shita, we'll call it the shita of the Tanakama, because the next words of the Mishnah talk about Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, who's arguing with the Tanakama, okay? So, the missing words say, when is it true that if the lender says that I want to get paid from either of you as I choose, so then he doesn't need to take the borrower to Beis Din? That's assuming that there's no other real assets that are known to the borrower from which the lender could collect. In other words, when a person, we've seen this already numerous times, when a person makes a loan, so the borrower, whatever real assets he has, real assets mean his land, anything attached to the land, so land and buildings on the land, like an apartment, or a home or a farm. So those things automatically become encumbered. They get like a lien, like a bank mortgage, and they stand, so to speak, as guarantors on the loan, such that they refer to throughout Kol Tarkula as nechasim sheyesh lehem achrayus. They're assets that have to stand responsible for default on the loan, meaning that even if the borrower, after borrowing the money, sells it to a third party, if the borrower doesn't pay back his loan, the lender can go to the third party and say, listen, you bought that house from my borrower, right? I made the loan before you bought it. You should have checked the, done title search and checked and see that he never knows that I had this contract out and there was an encumbered, there's a lien on that property, and I have to be made whole from your property. So that is true. We can do that in general. So our mission here is saying that while if the lender says, I'm a nashe parma misha eretz, I want to get paid back from either the borrower or the arev, the guarantor, so then he can go to the guarantor without taking the borrower to Bezdin, that's true, but that is only true. B'midavar murim, says the missing words, that's only true when the borrower has no other real assets that would stand to guarantee the loan. But the real assets are like a guarantor that, so to speak, stand in front of the warren, the actual human guarantor. And therefore, says the Tanna Kamma, in such a scenario where the borrower is not paying back the loan, the first port of call, even if he says, Al Menashe, Paro Misha Yeretz, I'm paying back from either one of you, the lender still has to go first to try to collect from the real estate that is encumbered, that used to belong to the borrower, before he goes and demands money back from Arev, the human Arev, Warren, the guarantor. Okay. Aval, however, if Yesh Nachasim Lalova, if he has, the borrower has properties, Lo Yipar Mina Arev, then the guarantor doesn't need to pay until the lender first tries to get out his money back from the encumbered properties. But further, missing words, a new topic. If the Arev is called an Arev Kablan, it's a new term of art. Arev Kablan is somebody who doesn't just say, Warren doesn't just say to Reuven, lend my buddy Shimon money, and if he doesn't pay you back, I will. He says, lend my buddy Shimon money, and I will pay you back. Okay? Not if he doesn't pay you back, but I'll reimburse you. So that's like more like he's like almost like a second borrower or co-equal borrower. So if he's a Kablan, meaning Arev Kablan, but he made himself like a co-borrower, so to speak. So then, says Tanna Kamma, afal pi sheyesh nechasim lalova, even if the borrower has other assets, other real assets, yipar min a kablan, so then if the borrower won't pay, then the lender can go straight to the arev and not even have to deal with trying to extract value from his old properties. He doesn't want to deal with that. He says, I don't want to deal with that, so he doesn't have to deal with that. Now, that's fine, says Tanna Kamma, but Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, im yesh nechasim lalova, Rav Shimon Gamliel says no. If the borrower has assets, then even if ben kach o ben kach, whether the arev was a generic arev who says lend to my friend Shimon, if he doesn't pay you, then I will pay you, or if he is an arev kablan, basically saying lend to him and I will reimburse you. Either way, lo yipara, the loan should not be repaid back, meaning from the borrower to the lender, min ha'arev, from the pocket of the guarantor, good old Warren, unless first the borrower is taken to court. That's Rav Shimon Gamliel's opinion. And like on a related topic, it's not the same, but a related idea. Now we're shifting over to Kesubas Isha here. V'chein, the same kind of principle applied. Hayar Rav Shimon Gamliel, the same Rav Shimon Gamliel, he said, Omer, if you have he'arev le'isha b'ksubasa, you have a man who stood as a guarantor for a woman's ksuba. So here you have, Reuven is marrying Leah, and Leah is afraid to get married because Reuven is not a person of means. So she says, how do I know you're going to pay me my ksuba in the event that you divorced me? So Reuven gets his friend Warren to underwrite to guarantee as an arev on the ksuba so that Leah can know if Reuven doesn't pay her ksuba, then Warren will. So Arev Le'isha B'Ksubasa, if Warren stands to be an Arev on the Ksuba, so then that's of course going to work, but if they try to pull this off, and V'haya Bala Megarsha, if Reuven indeed is going to divorce Leah, So before he can collect from Warren, which we said in the previous line of the Mishnah, he could collect from Warren right away, right? Because the Warren was acting as our kavlan, could right away. But if Reuven isn't paying, Leah, I don't know if it's that before, Leah can go to Warren right away. But first, says the Mishnah, Yadirena Hana'a, she, Leah, has to take a vow, a neder, against getting any future Hana'a from her, I'll call it ex-husband, Reuven. Okay? And this is not just any kind of neder, it's like a neder, a heavy-duty neder, the kind that even expert dayan can't annul. It has to be like a heavy one. It's called the aldas rabim, which require like a formal bezin to annul it if it would come to annulment. Because shema yaasu kanunya, we're afraid that Leah and Reuven are pulling off a kanunya. Kanunya is like a scheme, like they're colluding, to make some kind of trick. Okay, and we're afraid of collusion, meaning. What was the trick? The trick was, Reuven says to Leah, listen, we can get rich. My buddy Warren's super rich. Let me divorce you, then I won't pay you back. You'll then get the money from Warren, and then you and I will get remarried and fly off to Tahiti, and we'll be rich off Warren's back. So that's the kanunya, okay? That's the collusion, the trick, conspiracy. But the rabbi said we can prevent that from happening by forcing Leah to make a neder ahead of time that she won't get benefit from Reuven, which would mean they can't get married ever again. So that would stop the kanunya, would stop this, conspiracy. So says the Mishnah inside, Shema Yaasu kanunya, we're afraid without the neder that Reuven and Leah are pulling off some kind of collusion, kanunya, al nechasim shelzeh, to suck out money from Warren, the guarantor, and then after they get the money from him, the Yachzir es Ishto, then Reuven will take his wife Leah back, remarry her, and they'll be richer and right off into the sunset. Now, of course, even as a guarantor and Warren has to pay, Warren could still sue Reuven to get the money back. But that doesn't mean Reuven will pay him back. Reuven and Leah could go off to Tahiti, and then Warren is left, high and dry without a way to collect the money that Reuven essentially, contrived to steal from him.